A garden center this time of year is some people's version of heaven. Rows and rows of bedding plants. Yes, the possibilities are endless, but the options can be a little overwhelming. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturists Richard Duran and Chris Curry of Iowa State University will be here to give us some guidance on picking out bedding plants. And of course, they are also ready to answer your questions. And our spring membership drive is underway. It's our 2-for-1 and then we're done drive, which means that if this drive is successful, we won't do another one in the summer. So give at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is time for planting, and garden centers are fully stocked right now. This hour, we'll get some guidance on making good choices when we're picking out our bedding plants. And of course, later in the hour, we'll also be answering your questions. Horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension is here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And Chris Curry, an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State, is also here. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for being on the show today. And I think a lot of us feel like a kid in a candy store when we get into the garden center in the springtime. Is it important to prepare ourselves before we go?
Well, I think get your wish list ready. That always helps. Yeah, I think it's good to get some ideas of what you're going to look for in the garden. And when you're getting into that garden center, you can start, you know, preparing your garden. So, yeah, there's some things that you can do to get ready to get the plants that you need from your garden centers.
All right. So it's a good idea to know what you want. I think most of us always come home with a few more things than we intended to go in and buy. But when we're in there, you know, there are so many plants and they're so beautiful. How do we pick good, strong plants that are going to continue to be beautiful or will become more beautiful throughout the summer?
Well, I think the first thing that you want to do is start out by knowing where you're going to plant your plants. And the reason why that's an important thing going into a greenhouse is, like you're mentioning, those things that magically appear in your cart on their own. They look cool. You want to grow them. They seem fun. Well, you want to make sure that you're picking out plants for the right site, because if you get a plant that's made to grow in the shade, but you plant it in the sun, it's just going to get burned up and melt out of the garden. And then you might be disappointed. So it's always good to know where you're going to be planting the plants that you're selecting. So having an idea of the conditions where you're planting is the first thing to do.
Okay, so that's step one. And once we've done that and we get there, I mean, that we can look at the information on the little, on the bedding plans. There's always the little tag in there that says full sun, part sun, shade, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty reliable information, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty much what you need to see is mostly, is it going to be sun or shade? Because like I said, you don't want to have a sun plant growing in the shade. Otherwise, it's going to just kind of be leggy, might not flower as much. And you might be disappointed through no fault of the plants. Just surely how it got placed. So know your site. Another thing to do that I think is really helpful is to look at the flowers on the plant. And this isn't just to see if you like the plant, if you think it's cool, but look at the flowers that are on the annuals or on the perennials, and then take a look at the tag and make sure that they match up, because sometimes you can get plants that were accidentally tagged incorrectly or maybe were the wrong color of impatiens that got placed in these flats. And so you always want to make sure that the tag is the plant that you're looking for and that the plant in that container is the same color as your tag. Again, because you don't want to get one of those accidental misplants.
Right, right. Like the crab apple tree in our yard that we thought was purple, but it's white.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, and I'm sure you picked that out either in the spring as it might have been budded up, or maybe in the fall when it had some fruits on it, but you didn't actually get to see it. So yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
It's still pretty. It's just not purple.
Yeah.
So, you know, speaking of blossoms, a lot of the plants at garden centers do look amazing, especially when we're talking about those annual flowers. Do we want a plant with a lot of blossoms on it?
Well, that's a good question. Do you want a plant with a lot of flowers on it? That's actually something that can vary with the person, and it can also vary in the gardening culture. And I think a really good example of that is in Australia, the Australian bedding plant market prefers to purchase bedding plants that are still green and don't have flowers on them.
Okay.
The reason is because in that gardening culture, there's a lot of enjoyment of planting the plant as it's still green and bringing it into bloom under your care. So that's kind of an interesting thing that they like to do.
Right.
And we're seeing a difference. In the United States, we're seeing a large trend of consumers purchasing larger containers that are already a little bit bigger, well, quite a bit bigger sometimes, than plants grown in packs and have a lot more flowers. And it's more immediate gratification or designing with plants, not so much the tending to them. That being said, places like Iowa, where we have a lot of people with farm backgrounds, we still have really good pack sales, those six packs, those four packs, because people generally like to garden here. So really, whether they've got flowers on them or not, it's a personal preference.
Okay. It doesn't really impact how the plant will develop once you get it home. I've often wondered about that. You know, maybe they've already grown to the point where they won't develop as much in a new environment. Am I wrong about that?
Not entirely. With annuals, they're bred to, and they're produced because they're going to go strong all summer long. They're going to keep growing in your garden, even if they are flowering. They're still going to be putting on new leaves, growing branches. They're still going to grow fine. You might see a little bit of differences with perennials. Now, perennial production in the past few years has become a lot more like growing annuals, where producers are trying to produce perennials in a container that are in bloom. And one of the reasons they're doing that is because it helps the marketability of perennials, because people can see the flower on the plant that they're getting. And that helps with not only knowing what you're getting, but it also helps, again, going back to those plants that just jump in your cart, it can help increase impulse sales. And there's been some studies done at Michigan State University on these perennials that they bring into flower several months early, because, you know, we've got some later or midsummer flowering perennials that are going to be in bloom in the next few weeks here in the garden centers. They planted them in the garden and then tracked their growth over the next few years, and they came back and flowered perfectly normally the next years after planting.
Okay. Now, also, as the plants get bigger in these garden centers, sometimes they get a little leggy. Is that something we need to be wary of?
It can be, and I think one of the best signs of some plants that have gotten to be too leggy, if you think of the bedding plant impatiens, maybe not as popular now as it once was, but you've seen flats of bedding impatiens that look like they enlist in the military. Someone's gone through and just sheared them down because they were getting too leggy. Mm. Generally, you want to avoid plants that are too leggy, because when you take them out of that flat and plant them on proper spacing, so 8, 10, 12-inch centers between your annuals, they're going to flop over because they're going to be so top-heavy. Whereas when they're on that high density in the greenhouse, they're kind of propping each other up. So it's generally a good idea to try and look for more compact plants.
Okay, things that are a little smaller.
Yep.
And what about, can you look at, like, the size of the stem? I know that they tend to be pretty standard across a species, but is there something you can look at there?
Well, I tell you, if the plant is moderately compact, I don't really so much look at the stem. I look down a little bit lower. So greenhouse and garden center owners, please cover your ears right now. I like to pop the plant out of the container and look at the roots.
Okay.
To me, I love a good root system. If it's got a good root system, it's likely going to transplant well, and you're going to get strong garden performance.
And what does a good root system look like?
Well, there are some generalizations that you can make. First of all, when you take the plant out of the container, are the roots growing on the outside of that soil ball? And that just shows that the plant is mature and it's rooted in the container and it's going to transplant well. So that's, you want to be able to see those roots. If they're not growing out into the substrate or the growing media, it means that the roots are a little underdeveloped. So you want to see that root system. Another thing is the color of the root system. Generally, roots should look white to a light tan. And that's a broad generalization to make, because some roots are going to be different color than others. But generally, they should look a lighter color. If you see real dark roots, that may indicate not the greatest health.
Okay. And now we need to open the phones. We'd love to hear from you with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But Richard, we've talked about this many times, and Chris, I'm sure you can also give us advice, but once we get those bedding plants home, they've been grown in a very different environment than our flower bed or our garden. So what do we have to do to harden them off before we plant them?
Well, if they were grown in a greenhouse, bring them home, put them on the north side of a building in complete shade, and then gradually expose those to longer periods of sunlight. And in about 5, 6, 7 days, you can plant them directly in the garden.
Okay, so there is an important step to take before you just stick them in the ground.
Right. Now, if they were purchased at a garden center where they've been outside, you shouldn't need that. But if they're coming from a greenhouse, they should be hardened off.
All right. Good advice. And again, you can call us 866-780-9100. We have Jim on the line in Guttenberg. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What's your question?
This doesn't have anything to do with bedding plants exactly, but a friend of mine has had a white peach that she took the pit and it's growing. And I'm just wondering, and she wanted to know if I wanted it, and I was just wondering if that is going to grow up properly and what your thoughts are about planting something that's just come from the seed.
All right. Well, Jim, you would be surprised by how often we get this question. People love to sprout things like that,
right?
Don't they, Richard?
And the white peach is much hardier than the typical peach. And so if you have a seedling and if it's not too big, you can actually move it, transplant it to your site. So you want to do that early, though, before it begins to leaf out.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. And with the peach, Richard, I mean, when you sprout it from the seed, do we know what kind of peach is going to come off that tree?
Well, if it's from a white peach, it should be another white peach. And so the ideal way to do that would be to plant those in the fall because they have to be exposed to cool, moist conditions. Winter takes care of that. And so they should germinate in spring. Now, if you were to, let's say you buy a peach in the store and you ate the peach, you really thought it was a good peach, you planted the peach pit, it would not be true to what you actually ate. It would be different genetically. And most likely it wouldn't be hardy in Iowa either. So it's not worth the effort.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Dean is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Dean.
Good morning.
What's your question?
A friend of mine cut off some rose bush branches. Some of them are like 3 feet long and about 3/8 of an inch thick. And they were budding. He was going to throw them away. Well, I put them in a bucket so I could ask y'all what possibly could be done with those to make them grow rose bushes.
Yeah, they really don't root very well. So unfortunately, I don't think you can do much of anything. Most woody plants, especially when they're that big as far as in width, are very, very slow to root. And what's going to happen is it's going to leaf out. It's not going to have a root system. It's going to collapse and die. So unfortunately, you really can't do much of anything.
Okay, bummer. Thank you for your call, Dean. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Marilyn in Elkhart has a question very close to your heart, Richard. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have a lot of shade, and I have, in the past, planted a lot of impatiens, and they've always done beautifully until last year when I lost several flats worth to the downy mildew. And I see that this year they have some bounce, I think is the variety, that's supposed to be resistant to that. Is it really? Is it worth it?
It's a possibility. The New Guinea impatiens are not affected by impatiens downy mildew. Now, in the past, most of those were grown from cuttings, and they tend to be rather expensive. But they do have some newer varieties that are grown from seed, and they're starting to come out on the market. And so you can buy these in like 4-packs or 6-packs. And I would look for those, specifically those in the Divine series and Florific series. So look for those. They do very, very well in partial shade, not so much in heavy shade, but they'll do very well in partial shade. And you should be seeing those nowadays in the greenhouses.
Okay, but so that bounce, because isn't that a regular impatiens? I've seen the New Guineas before, and they just aren't the same thing.
No, the bounce is a New Guinea type. It is a New Guinea type. And I think it was an All-America selection for this year, I believe. And I think it's grown from actual cuttings. So they tend to be a little bit expensive, but any of the New Guineas would be fine. Just realize they may not bloom as well in heavy shade. They do much better in partial shade.
All right, Marilyn, good luck with that. And have you been happy with New Guinea impatiens in your yard, Richard?
Yes, I have. Good. Yes, I have. They've done quite well. Again, especially in partial shade where I have deep shade underneath my pin oak. They do bloom a little bit, but it's mainly green instead of red or pink.
All right. Well, and we'll slip in one email question before we get to our break here. This is from Derek in Iowa City. We and everyone else in our neighborhood had extensive deer damage to arborvitae over the winter, mm-hmm. with the foliage pretty well decimated up to deer height. Will those plants recover in the damaged areas, or are they permanently disfigured?
Yeah, they're basically disfigured permanently. Unfortunately, with evergreens, they don't have this recuperative power to generate new growth from bare areas. So the bottom areas probably are not going to regenerate very well.
All right. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Horticulturist Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension is here, along with Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. And you can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
By inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. With me, Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. And you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I have to say, this is such an exciting time of year because things are starting to bloom. And I've seen bluebells, which are my favorite wildflower. I've seen bluebells
yes.
in bloom. So this is the time to go out and explore. What have you seen that's gotten you excited lately?
Well, Creeping Charlie is blooming right now, too.
Which is one of the first foods for pollinators in the spring, right?
But also things like bloodroot is beginning to bloom, too. So some of your woodland plants are blooming really nicely. Also, here in Ames, at least, central Iowa, the crabapples are starting to bloom. Also, the serviceberries and... even the magnolias are still in bloom at this point.
Right. And I've seen red buds in bloom in
yes.
eastern Iowa. And in town, lots of bulbs seem to be blooming. Out where I live in the country, we have one lonely daffodil right now. But the others are coming.
Right. Tulips and daffodils are blooming heavily at this point.
Nice. Nice. You can join our conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. Well, Katrina in Dubuque has a question about daffodils. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's about bulbs in general. I've got some daffodil bulbs that were purchased to be put in last fall. They didn't get put in, so I wonder, can I put those in now or do I wait till next fall?
Well, unfortunately, my guess is they have died by this point. They don't store very well long term, and my guess is they probably have... dried out and died in the meantime. Now, you can check on that by just going out there maybe and grasping one and see if it seems solid and firm or kind of shriveled and dried up. If it's shriveled and dried up, it definitely is dead and you might as well toss them. If they appear to be solid, you can put them in the ground now, but they are not going to be alive by this coming fall.
Is there a possibility that they would actually bloom this spring? If you
no,
put them, no, okay.
no, because they have to be exposed to cool temperatures. So I think their outlook is pretty grim.
All right.
But if they are solid and firm, put them in the ground now. If they're kind of dried up, just toss them.
Okay. All right. So if you put them in the ground now, there might be a chance that they would bloom next year.
Right. If they were alive, they would send up foliage this year and then die back and hopefully bloom next spring.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones. Martha is on the line next in Nichols. Hi, Martha.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have some surprise lilies. They came up beautifully last spring. However, last fall, I did not get any lilies.
Okay.
And the foliage is coming up again.
Okay.
This spring, and I don't know whether I should take them out or what.
Okay. There's two things that may be occurring. They may not be getting enough sun. That may be a factor. The other thing would be, have you cut them back prematurely as far as the foliage?
I don't think so, and okay. They've got plenty of sun.
Okay. Well, I would go ahead and let them do their thing this year, and then if they don't bloom, I would maybe dig these up in late August, early September, and maybe divide them. Sometimes they reproduce and get very crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead and separate those and replant and see what they do next year.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Dana in Pella. Hi, Dana.
Hi there. I just have a quick comment. There was a previous caller that mentioned having longer lengths of rose bush cuttings. And I have an idea he might like. My sister told me about this. If you take the cutting and you dab it into a potato and you plant the whole thing, potato gives it stability and something for the roots to kind of move through, and it will actually, the rose bush will produce. So just an idea.
Okay, Richard, have you heard about that one before?
No, I haven't.
All right.
I have my doubts, I guess.
All right. But worth exploring if you're interested, right? All right. Steve is on the line next in Badger. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Hey, I have a question about, I have some commercial sweet corn that I had left over from last year. Is it worth planting or should you just go ahead and buy some new?
It should be okay. Certain seeds like tomatoes and peppers, cucumbers, squash, you can store those typically for 3 or 4 years. With sweet corn, they lose their viability much quicker. I would say 1 year you could store those. They should be okay. But three-year-old seed, no. It would not germinate very well.
All right. Steve, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jessica from Des Moines writes, what kinds of herbs will do well in flower boxes? I'm trying to avoid herbs that might take over the small space. The flower box gets sun part of the day and shade part of the day.
Well, they could maybe try chives, would be a possibility. They might try some of the shorter basils. They grow very easily. So those might be possibilities.
Do you think that you could plant more than one in a flower box?
It depends upon the size. Obviously, if it's a big box, you could probably have several plants in it.
Another addition that might be a good one is, it was recently in All America Selection, fernleaf dill. It's a small statured dill plant.
Okay, so it wouldn't just dominate the space.
No, it would play nicely.
All right, that sounds like fun. Let's go back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I have some blueberry bushes or plants formerly known as blueberry bushes that I planted last spring, and they were growing nicely all last spring and summer. And then over the winter, rabbits cut them down to about just a couple inches in height, and just completely nipped them off. And I'm wondering, some of them still have green in the cambium, and I'm wondering if they're worth leaving in or if they're done for.
I would give them a reprieve, maybe wait another 30 days or so, and see what they're doing by, let's say, mid-May. My hope would be that I would see some sprouts coming out near the base of the plant. And if I see that, then I would say, okay, they might recover. If I see nothing by mid-May, not a very good outlook for them, I might wait until June 1. And by June 1, if I see nothing, they come out.
Okay. And if they are resprouting, though, there's a good chance that they could then reach their full potential even with this cutoff?
They might. They've been set back quite a bit by a year or two, obviously. And what I would do is, if they do come back, I would buy some hardware cloth, and I would make a fence and put it around each plant and leave it there, and so that this does not happen again.
Right, yeah, we would learn a lesson from
that. So, but they love little blueberry plants, they do, and when food is scarce, they can cause quite a bit of damage.
Yes, okay, well, good. There's a chance, then, it sounds like.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. Good luck with that.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Suzanne is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Charity. I've got a question about moving daffodils and other spring bulbs. When I try to do it in the fall, I either can't find them or I stab them all to death.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if I can do it before then, either now or just after they bloom, or before their foliage completely dies in midsummer.
Yeah, basically you have two options. You want to wait until they die back, the foliage dies back, and you could do it then. That would be probably late June or so.
Mm-hmm.
Because by then, they basically have stored up food in their bulbs, and they're basically set for next spring.
Okay.
The other option would be to label the spot so you know exactly where they are and do it in the fall. So.
Okay, great.
Yeah, those little flags on on wires, those are good, right?
Yeah, but when I do that, then I just always end up, you know, going into the middle of the bunch or something.
Right.
I'm not very accomplished at that, so practice.
It makes mowing more difficult, too. Suzanne, thank you for your call. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here's a big question. I'm not sure if you guys know the answer to this one, but we'll give it a try. Martha's on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Martha.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering if Dr. Curry would know what the status of greenhouse production is in Iowa. Is it expanding, contracting, and if he knows of any new exciting greenhouse endeavors in Iowa?
Well, I can tell you, as of the recent economics, Iowa is just about at the middle of the pack when you look at the states across the country and how they rank nationally. We're about, I think we were 24th last time I checked. So that's pretty good. And as far as some of the trends that we're seeing in Iowa, a lot of the greenhouses are actually doing pretty good. We're starting to see more construction happening, more building, more planting. So, the past few years, things are looking better for greenhouses, and one of the other things we've been seeing is an increased interest in food production. So some greenhouse growers are looking into producing hydroponic lettuce, hydroponic herbs, tomatoes, so there is some diversification. But overall, the state of the Iowa greenhouse industry is pretty good right now.
All right, Martha.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. And that sounds like something we should spend a little more time on some other day.
Yeah.
You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Anne is up next in Marshalltown. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is about a tomato. Last year, my tomatoes were attacked by a fungus. And I'm wondering if I can plant my tomatoes in that same area and if there's something I can do to the soil to make sure that the fungus doesn't live bother me for another year.
Unfortunately, the plant pathogens can persist in the soil for 2 or 3 years. So putting them back in the same area would be not a wise thing to do. It's best to rotate, find a different site.
Okay.
As far away as you can. And ideally, you want to stay away from this place for 3 years. It takes that long
really?
For the pathogens to die out. Now, you can put in other things where you had your tomatoes last year. You could put in cabbage or cucumbers, whatever, just something different. But definitely, you want to choose a new site as far away as you can if you have a small garden. And
well,
I
have a small garden, but
right.
My problem is that I've got a walnut tree on one end of it, and I know that that's not good for tomatoes,
so
I'll just have to pick out another place farther away from both of them.
Well, you can actually maybe put one or two in a flower bed if you have an open space that gets plenty of sun. You could do that.
Well, I was just going to ask, if she's really in a pinch, should she try container gardening in the same spot? Would that do it?
Well, she can try growing some of the determinate varieties in a container. It's going to have to be a big container, like a 4 or 5 gallon container, but they can do that.
Uh-huh.
If you do that, you want to use a commercial potting mix rather than soil. So you have your options. But if you plant them back in the garden, make sure you rotate as best you can, get away from that spot as best you can, and also make sure they're well spaced so they're not overcrowded. Grow them in a cage where they're up off the ground. Mulch around them with maybe wood, with grass clippings or straw. And you can do all those things that would tend to discourage a new infection.
All right. Good luck, Anne. Many people struggle with this same problem. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tom is up next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I wanted to ask about, I wanted to grind out a bunch of mulberry trees and about and replant a pine tree there, a Vanderwolf pine in that area. I wondered about the attack from the remaining roots that are in the vicinity.
Oh, shouldn't be a problem. Now, you can't plant directly where the old mulberry was, but you can move a few feet away. You may run into a few roots as you dig the hole. Just cut through those. And as far as planting, it shouldn't be affected.
You could ask about transplanting a volunteer pin oak tree spring or fall.
Ideally, before it leaves out in the spring, that would be the best time. And you want to do it when they're quite small. As they get bigger, they're more difficult to move. But you want to do that preferably in the spring before they begin to leaf out.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100. Britta is on the line next. Hi, Britta.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is about iris. I have some on the southwest side of my house that the roots are a little bit exposed, but they don't flower. And I'm wondering, do I need to separate them? Are they not getting enough light? They are next to a burning bush.
Okay. Well, they're probably bearded iris, and they do need at least 6 hours direct sun to bloom well. The other thing is that after 4 or 5 years, they get rather overcrowded. And if they're overcrowded, they won't bloom very well. So what I would do this year is, if they don't bloom very well, I would go out in July or August, and I would dig them up, divide them, and replant them, and make sure that in the new site they have at least 6 hours of direct sun per day.
Okay. I think that'll work then. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, we've got Carol in Iowa City. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I would like to plant some blueberries this spring, and I was wondering, in Iowa City, is it a good idea? I just heard about putting the cages around so the rabbits don't eat them. The site would have no sun in the morning, but from about noon on, it's full sun, maybe 11 on.
Okay, that should be sufficient.
And my main thing is taste. Are there ones that taste sweeter than the others?
Well, I'm not sure about the taste, but we can grow both high bush and low bush blueberries. And as far as planting them, there are two requirements. They need a well-drained soil. They have to have a well-drained soil. If they're put in a poorly drained soil, they tend to get a root rot and they die. So make sure it's a well-drained soil. They also need an acidic soil, which we typically don't have. They prefer a pH around 4, 4.5 or so. And so when you plant these, the best way to deal with that is to dig a very wide hole, maybe 3 feet across, but quite shallow because they have a shallow fibrous root system. Take half the soil and then mix that with sphagnum peat moss, which is very acidic. And so backfill with that 50-50 mix of soil and peat moss. And then once you're done planting, then go ahead and use wood chips, which helps to maintain that acidity. And then make sure they're kept watered that spring and summer.
Okay.
All right.
And they won't produce. They really shouldn't be allowed to produce for at least 2 years. Because they need to develop a nice root system, a nice branching habit. So even if they bloom, let's say next spring, you'd want to pinch those off so all their effort goes into additional growth.
Oh, that's the hardest thing to do.
It's harder to do, yes.
All right, Carol, thank you so much for your call. And next we'll go to an Apple question. Lynn is on the line in Hubbard. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a Harrelson apple tree, and I was out looking at it yesterday, and of course, I was very devastated when I saw all of the holes in it all the way around. You know, obviously I must have bugs or something because I've got these rings all the way around.
Okay. So they're in a ring. They're in a line, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Actually, what you have is a sapsucker. which is a type of woodpecker. And they're not actually native to Iowa. They're kind of migratory, so they're not year-round residents. But as they travel through Iowa, they feed on certain trees. They feed on things like apples and crabapples and pines. And what they do is they peck holes in a pattern, okay, in a line. And so when you see that, you know it's the woodpecker. And basically in response to that pecking, the tree sends out some sap, which they basically lick up. They eat.
Yes.
So that's what they're doing. Usually they don't kill the tree, but if you have quite a few rows very close together, they can damage it. And one thing you can do maybe is put some burlap around it in that area to discourage additional damage. But usually they don't kill the tree.
Okay. Yes, it's on, they aren't real close together. I suppose maybe they're 8 or 10 inches apart, but on several, you know, the larger base and the larger trunk.
That does not sound significant as far as damage-wise. The tree should be fine. I have some on my crabapple, so it's pretty common on apples and crabapples.
All right, Lynn, thanks for your call. And here's another apple question from John. He says, my son has a Honeycrisp apple tree that was girdled by rabbits over the winter. He was told by someone at a garden store that it may survive by applying a ceiling tree paint. I think that's a waste of time and money. What do you think?
It's a waste of time and money.
Okay.
Unfortunately, because once that has been disconnected, you can't reattach them. You can't. And so putting a wound dressing pruning paint on that exposed area doesn't accomplish anything, unfortunately.
All right, so father knows best in this case.
So,
all right, let's go back to the phones. Bob's on the line in Tipton. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are we doing?
Good. What's your question?
Walking around my yard, I noticed my spireas, there's a lot of dead in it. Is it too late to trim them all the way back?
With spireas, I would say no. I would prefer to do that maybe in late March, early April, but spireas are hard to kill. So if you do it very soon, they should be fine. They should recover.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. Next up, Joe and Allison. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
My wife started some vegetable seedlings indoors about a month ago, some tomatoes and peppers and so forth. And she just recently transplanted them to a little larger pot. And I've noticed they're looking kind of chlorotic, kind of yellow. And I was wondering, we're not quite sure what's going on with them.
All right, I've got a question for you. Have you provided them with any fertilizer?
No, I don't believe they've been fertilized at all. I think they've just been put in potting soil.
And you said they've been grown for about a month or so?
Yeah.
And you said they were growing pretty well for about a month or so?
Yeah, they looked really good up until just recently.
Then what it sounds like to me that they need is just some fertilizer, and this could be some Miracle-Grow or some slow controlled-release fertilizer that you could just top-dress on the container. But if they started out well and they grew well, it likely means that they just depleted any sort of fertilizer that may have been in the growing media. Sometimes they'll put a little bit in there. So it just sounds like a fertilization issue. Add some fertilizer, they should green right back up.
All right, so a comeback is likely.
Yeah, especially the note that they were growing well, we transplanted them, now they just look a little chlorotic. It just sounds like fertilizer. So yeah, they'll be back and growing strong.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for your call. And we are out of time for today. Chris Curry, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I always appreciate it.
Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Of course, we will be back next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.
Souls and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Dust off the sun and moon and sing a song of